and welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Good morning, friends. How are you? I hope your day's off to a great start. It's Jessica, and I'm so excited to bring you another awesome episode today. Today, I'm speaking with Wynn Elder. I originally heard about Wynn on a different podcast that I love, The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey. And just from the moment that I heard her speaking and sharing her a little bit of her story, I was just so impressed and just kind of taken with her. So when I reached out to interview her about her motherhood journey, I was so excited when she responded and said, yes, she'd love to share. And so she is an adoptive mom of two little ones from Africa, and she is also expecting after a very long battle with infertility. As someone who's been down that road, she really wanted to reach out to other women going through similar struggles. And so she created the Carry On Retreat, which really empowers and creates a community surrounding this journey of infertility where people often feel isolated and alone and just conflicting emotions. And so to be able to have this community of people that you can really identify with, that has to be hugely beneficial. It was such a treat getting to talk to Wynn, and I know you're going to love getting to know her as well. So let's chat with Wynn Elder. All right. I want to welcome Wynn Elder to the show. Hi, Wynn.
Hi.
How's it going?
I'm so excited to be chatting with you.
I'm excited, too. Where am I speaking to you from today?
I am in Bryan, Texas. Bryan College Station.
Okay. Are you from there?
Texas A&M.
Sweet. Are you from there originally?
No, I'm originally from Waco.
Okay, cool. Okay, have you been to the Magnolia Farms and the silos and all that?
I actually just went for the first time a few months ago, but I've been shopping at Joanna's old store since I was a freshman in college.
That's cool. That's awesome. Well, I first heard about you on one of my favorite podcasts, The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey, and was so impressed with you. And since learning more, I've just continued to be impressed and inspired by you, not just impressed on a surface level, but I think you're doing great work. So for people that may not know you, will you just give a little background on yourself?
Sure. My husband and I have been married. It'll be 10 years and a few weeks. And we have two kids, Camp and Asher. They're 4 and a half. We adopted them from Ethiopia, and we actually brought them home 4 years ago this week.
Wow.
So they were little bitty babies, and we've also have been struggling with infertility for 7 years and are currently expecting our first biological child in February.
Yay! Congratulations!
Thank you. Yeah, through sort of adoption and infertility, God has just done a lot of things in our lives and opened lots of doors. I've been an ambassador for New Day Collection for 5 and a half years. I had the founders at our first adoption conference, and adoption just sort of blew our minds and opened our worlds to missions and fair trade and just a bunch of different things that were not on our radar at all. Mm-hmm. And then through infertility, God's just been able to use my struggle and story in that to start an online and retreat ministry for other women struggling with infertility called the Carry Camp. And we just had our second retreat this past fall. And then here, where we are in Bryan, God's just really been showing me my passion, really deep down, I mean, is people. And I love connecting women, and just sort of creating spaces for people to gather and to belong. And so I call that haven making. And so I have a little cute little space in downtown Bryan called The Haven. And it's where the magic happens. I don't know. It's fun.
So what happens at The Haven?
Well, it's sort of, I've had it for 2 years, and it's been a lot of different things over the years, but currently I am more renting it out for events and pop-up shops, and I'd love to do more like creative kind of workshops. Our community group meets there often, our girls do, and I go down there a few times a week and work and sit and read and
wow.
Do all my things too. So it's really fun.
I love that. Have you always been a creative person?
Well, I started doing photography in 2010 or 2009. I, I think I always knew I was creative, but since I couldn't paint or draw or mm-hmm. do any of the typical things that you think of when you think of creative people, I didn't know how, I don't know. I feel like when I found photography, it went from inside my head to into something productive. And yeah, so since then, like, just sharing stories through photography and writing has been something that I've loved to do. So
yeah, and I find that women oftentimes they don't really know what their real passion is, or what they don't have a hobby or things like that, because their kids just become their whole world, you know. But just because right. you haven't been into something, you know, in your previous years in life, it doesn't mean you can't start something new. So maybe taking a random ballet class could spark this whole new, totally. You know, path for you. Or maybe it is totally. Art, or maybe it's photography, maybe it's cooking, you know. I just yeah. really encourage women to try and seek out new opportunities, because, I mean, don't you feel like since pursuing these types of avenues, it just kind of opened up your world to even bigger things that you didn't even think about yeah. to begin with?
Yeah, totally. How I got into photography, I took a class at mm-hmm. my church.
Okay.
And this was before we had kids, but it was called Digital Photography for Ministry. Mm. And in the middle of that class, I was like, man, it'd be really cool. And I had taken a photography class in college just for fun, because my dad and my grandfather were both just sort of hobbyist photographers, and my dad is still. But through that class, I realized what an impact storytelling can make for people. And I was like, man, I would love to go on a mission trip and take pictures and tell the stories. And I literally was sitting at the dining room table at my mentor's house telling her this when our missions pastor called and was like, hey, so this is sort of last minute, but do you want to go to El Salvador with a group of women over spring break and take pictures and video and bring the stories back to our church? I was like, yes.
Oh my gosh.
That just sort of started this whole thing. And then I was like, okay, now I think it'd be really cool to travel with an adoptive family and take pictures of them meeting their child for the first time.
Oh my gosh.
An international adoption. And I put it on Facebook somewhere, and the next day, Jessica, my friend who started Noonday Collection, called, and she didn't even see that post, but she's like, hey, do you want to come with us to Rwanda to, you know, document us meeting our son, Jack? I was like, yes. So it's been really cool to just see what God, I'm like, okay, I'm just dreaming out loud. Like I always say, even if you just tell one person, like, just speak right. it out loud and don't be afraid. But yeah, you're right. Like I'm, you know, now I have two kids and one on the way, and that season seems like a long time ago, but I also, like, I've been reading in Ecclesiastes, like there is a time and a season for everything. And I've been really inspired by friends of mine who are older, who pick up things and passions maybe after their kids are off to school or even grown.
Right.
Like I don't know. That really encourages me. I heard somebody on a podcast say one time, you can be everybody you want to be, just not all at the same time.
Yeah.
I love that, because it's like, I still have dreams and there's still things that I want to do, and maybe now isn't the season for them, but, you know, who knows what God has in store for later.
Right, and it could look completely different a few years down the road, but we don't need to get discouraged, like, oh, I'm just in the stage of Legos and Cheerios and diaper bags. And that can feel kind of overwhelming and a little bit right. stifling at times, right. especially if you're a creative who just thinks big and, you know, sees where things lead. But we don't need to get discouraged about yeah. that. It can look so different in the right time down the road. So when you were photographing these adoption stories, was that before yeah. that you adopted your kids?
Yes. So we were in the process, but we hadn't. The first one I did was with the Honiggers. And then most of the other ones that I did, it was when, so we went to court, Ethiopian court, for our kids in June mm-hmm. of 4 years ago, whatever year, 2012. And I actually ended up staying. You don't have to, but I ended up staying for 3 months just because I could. We didn't have any kids at home. I was running my photography business, and summer was sort of a slow time. So I lived with a missionary family and worked in this community that we had gone on several short-term trips with during the week. But then sort of to help me, you know, pay my bills while I was there, I photographed other adoptive families meeting their kids, and their donations to me helped me stay there. But it was really cool.
Wow.
Because there were several families who adopted from the same place that we did, and just getting to go with them and be a part of that. I mean, it's like such an honor.
Wow.
So awesome.
Wow. That has got to be so emotionally charged, and just to have that documented in a beautiful way from somebody that's so talented like you are of photography, what special images to capture?
Yes.
That's amazing. So had you planned on adopting, and what did your road to motherhood look like? Let's go a little bit more into that.
Okay. So my husband and I have what we called our 5-year plan. we got married really young. I mean, we're celebrating 10 years next week. We got married right after we graduated from college. And so we wanted to wait. And then about 3 years in, God totally changed my heart and made me ready to be a mom. And I was like, okay, I'm ready. Like, let's do this. And about a year into being ready and feeling like this is the Lord's timing and nothing happening, it was just confusing and disappointing. And just that first year was really isolating and lonely. I only told a few people. Most doctors, at least where I'm from, won't even talk to you about infertility stuff until you've been trying for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so a year was coming up in August, and that summer I was working for this ministry, and we put on a camp. And so I was really busy all summer, and I basically just told God, okay, I just need to put this on the shelf for the summer. I cannot deal with it. And I wish it was like in this, like, I surrender this to you, Lord, but it was just like, no, I cannot emotionally, physically,
I'm tired.
Handle the pain of this. Yeah, I'm tired. Like, I just want to have a good summer. It's going to be fun, and I'm going to be working hard and a lot. And so, but it was the last week of that camp that my mentor's daughter, Katie, she was a young college student, and she was like, just asking me why we didn't have kids yet. And I wasn't very open. Like, my own mom didn't even know. I was not very open with many people, but I just felt like she was a safe place to sort of share where I had been. And she told me the story of this other friend of hers, Katie, who they had struggled with infertility and had adopted from Guatemala. And Katie, the mom, ended up living in Guatemala for 8 months and fostering their son. And through that, they formed all these awesome relationships with the people there. And they now take college groups back every year for mission trips.
Mm-hmm.
And this young Katie had been on one of the mission trips. And so she's telling me this. And then she just says, have you ever considered adoption? And I looked at her, I was like, no. And she was like, okay, well, I think you should pray about it. And so God like really just used this bold young girl to challenge me. And when someone challenges you that way, what are you going to say? Like, no. And so I was like, okay, I'll pray about it. And I think God had just started to open my eyes. Like, hey, this year has been really hard, but the timing of you having a baby maybe has nothing to do with you. Maybe it has to do with when I want your child to come into the world or other people that your story could affect. And so I pretty quickly was like, okay, this is what we're supposed to do. I know it. And my husband thought I was really crazy. And so they call it like the red thread of adoption. Like, where you just, adoption was never on my radar. I didn't know anybody who was adopted, who had adopted. I mean, I found out later, like, people I knew growing up were adopted, but it was like back in a time where it was really secretive and nobody talked about it. And they looked like their parents, so you never would have known that they were adopted. Definitely didn't know anybody that was adopted, you know, biracially. And so it was sort of a shock to my family and to my husband when I was like, we're supposed to adopt internationally. And the Lord used this adoption conference a few months later to really speak to my husband. And I just knew that if he knew what God had showed me about adoption, that, you know, why we adopt is not just because we can't have our quote unquote own kids or our quote unquote own family, but because God adopted us while we were still sinners. And it's out of the overflow of that love that we adopt. And so when my husband finally got that, he's like, let's do it. Like, I'm in. So we, for some reason knew we were supposed to adopt from Africa. I don't know. I think now that I know more, it's harder for me because I know, oh man, there's so many options and things change all the time. And oh, we could adopt from this country, or we could do foster care, or we could do domestic, or like, but at the time I didn't know anything. And so it was really clear, Africa.
Wow.
Ethiopia and Uganda were the only countries at the time that we qualified for. And Uganda was a fairly new program, and Ethiopia had been a pretty steady program. And so we decided to adopt from Ethiopia, and we went on our first mission trip a few months after that. Well, that summer. So that was in the fall. Did some research for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Went on our first mission trip that fall, or that July, and went to both Uganda and Ethiopia. But when we got to Ethiopia, it felt like home to us. Like, I was like, I'm still, every time I go, like, a giddy schoolgirl, like the first one off the plane. Like, we just love it. We didn't just want to adopt and be like, see ya. Like, we want Ethiopia to be a part of our family's culture and something that we're passionate about. And, you know, look forward to the day when we can take the kids back. And
what is Ethiopia like? I've never been to Africa, any African countries. So for anybody that has not been as well, what's Ethiopia like?
Yeah, well, I've only been to East African countries, and they're all different, but Ethiopia is definitely its own place. It was never colonized, and so they have their own everything. Mm. I mean, obviously, every country has their own language, but they have their own calendar. They have their own clock. They just have, like, a different, distinct look about them. Just their culture is just coffee and music and countryside, and it's just, like, they're so, like, they're very touchy-touchy. you'll see people holding hands, walking down the road, and they share everything.
Wow.
Like, it's just crazy. But we love it.
That's amazing. So. That's amazing. So what surprised you the most along this international adoption road? Were there any times where you were like feeling overwhelmed or like, you know, I'm sure there was many of those times, but can you pinpoint anything where you were like second guessing if this was the right thing? Or did you always feel like, nope, we just keep going?
Yeah, no, I mean, everything was scary. Everything was unpredictable. We were walking blind. We didn't know what we were doing. We met friends along the way and developed an awesome community of other adoptive families. And it's just something that really easily connects you with people. But everything was new. Everything was, what are we doing? Everything drew us to a deeper intimacy with the Lord, I would say. And it was really cool to watch our community really rally around us and be a part of it and have our friends' kids understand it for the first time. Or there's so many cool stories of God's provision through it. And just we were living in West Texas when it happened, and I think it just really opened. And there were other families who adopted from there, mm-hmm. you know, adopted in our community as well. But yeah, it's sort of a whole different world. It's not how you expect to bring your first child.
Absolutely.
Into your family.
So for anybody that's interested in international adoption, do you have any advice or tips as far as what somebody might need to know that maybe you didn't know getting into it to begin with or starting that journey? What would you tell someone?
Yeah, I love to still talk to people who are pursuing the international route. It changes so much that since it's been 4 years since we adopted, there's so many things that I'm like, I really don't know. You're going to have to do your research. But I think it's knowing that every country has different requirements based on how old you are, how many kids you have at home, different health things. And so there's several websites, and I can tell you so you can link them for people to be able to, like Rainbow Kids is one where you can go through and see all the countries and if they're open, if they're closed, what the requirements are. A lot of countries have waiting children's lists. And so if you aren't set on a healthy, quote unquote, newborn, there are sibling sets. There are kids that have a varying degree of medical or special needs that are adoptable a lot faster than waiting for a healthy newborn.
Were you setting out to get two children, or how did that happen?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's a funny story. No, we were just going to adopt a little boy, but we got approved when we first started our homework, our home study for two kids, just in case. We didn't tell anybody. We weren't ever expecting to bring home two kids, but throughout the process, we got matched with a little boy, and while we were waiting through all that paperwork, we kept getting emails of other waiting children. And my husband really strongly felt like Camp had a sister. Hmm. We'd already named our son what we wanted to call him, Camp. And he felt really strongly that Camp was going to have a sister. And so I was like, okay. So we were praying about it. And I asked our agency, and they were like, no, we don't really, that's not how it works. Like, we don't adopt out unrelated kids. But long story short, we lost our first referral. And then we got presented with our two kids, who our kids are now, Camp and Asher, and had 24 hours to say yes or no. And so we knew we wanted Camp. I mean, that was like what we set out for this whole time. But him and Asher are 3.5 weeks apart. And so it was a little scary of like, okay, wait, I didn't want twins. Like, this is like way out of my comfort zone way, out of my league. Like, we don't even have any kids right now. Right. This is crazy.
Zero to two, really.
Yeah, really just felt like we had some friends come and pray with us and just spent the whole night just sort of considering and obviously said yes. And now we can't imagine. I mean, going zero to two kids
right.
was hard, but that's all we know.
Right.
And I feel like it really forced us to be a good team. And because I couldn't do two kids at once all the time by myself when they were really little. So
yeah, absolutely. So how old were they when you brought them home?
They were 7 and 8 months.
7 and 8 months. So what were those early days of motherhood like for you? I mean,
oh my gosh,
like having twins, essentially. Yeah. And I'm sure you got that question all the time. Are they twins? Yeah.
Yes. And when they were really little, if it was just a stranger at the grocery store, I just said yes because I didn't
That's easier.
Have to explain
yeah.
it. It was just too confusing. I know. I was thinking about that. That seems like so long ago. Well, with adoption, there's really is this whole process of cocooning and bonding when they come home. Mm-hmm. And so nobody really came over, except for like immediate family members for the first like 2+ months.
Okay.
We were the only ones that held them, that fed them, that changed their diapers, that put them down, like to really establish that we were their parents and we were the ones that were going to be taking care of their needs from now on. And so a lot of it, the early days seem sort of like a blur.
yeah, like for any mom,
And like none of our family lived in our town, and so our families would come and visit, but nobody was there like all the time.
Right.
Yeah, friends would drop off dinner on our porch and like not even come in for the first bit, and so it was sort of crazy, but it was sweet. We just were home. We were cuddled up at home.
Yeah.
Looking towards having a third, it's mm-hmm. crazy. You think like, how is my heart going to love another child right. as much as I love Camp and Asher? But I know it will.
Happen. Yeah.
My heart grows and expands. And, but so that seems a little scary.
You know, you take birthing classes and you do all this prep work thinking, okay, now I'm ready for the baby. But you're never actually like ready and all, you can never really truly understand what you're in for. Learning a new baby, whether it's your first or your 50th, is like, oh, it's a lot.
Yeah.
But you just do your best and you just keep snuggling them and keep smelling them and you're okay. You just keep going. That's all you need to do. And so after some time passed and you felt like you wanted to expand your family again, did you consider adoption again, or were you still hopeful that maybe going the biological route is what you wanted?
Yeah. So, I mean, we were going to go start fertility treatments after that summer at camp,
okay.
but God just sort of interrupted our plans with adoption. And mm-hmm. so during that time, we were still hopeful and we were still trying to conceive, had a surgery. Like, we did several things with my OB, but about 6 months after the kids came home. Yeah. And so like adoption is not a cure for having a desire to have a biological child. And for me, it is different. Again, it's different for every woman. For me, it wasn't necessarily, I want a biological child that looks like me and that has my genes. Like, I know that I can love a child that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I just really have desired the experience of being pregnant and going through all those things that God created and designed our bodies to do. And I just felt like I was missing out on that. And so I still had a desire for that. And so 6 months later, we went to fertility doctor and did all the things and made it all the way to IVF, and it didn't work. And we took a 2-year break, and in that time we moved to where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And my family really encouraged me to go to another doctor and get a second opinion. And we still had a few frozen embryos from our IVF cycle from spring 2 years ago, and found this awesome doctor that really took a different approach than any of my other doctors.
Mm.
And we implanted 2 embryos in May and found out in June that one took, and then we were pregnant. So
wow,
pretty incredible. Seven.
Wow. Seven years.
Year journey.
Wow. How are you different now in both your life perspective and the way that you view motherhood now versus when you started out on this journey? How has this really impacted you and changed you?
Oh, it's changed and shaped my entire, everything.
I'm sure.
Like, we call myself pre-Africa Win and post-Africa Win. I think I grew up and you think, you know, you're going to go to college and you're going to get married and you're going to have babies and, you know, buy a house and retire and just sort of live this, like, life that's planned out for you. And yeah. God totally interrupted our plans. It just opened our eyes to a whole new world. And everything has changed. Everything is different. We say that God gloriously ruined our lives. Like,
yeah.
He ruined them in the best way. And so... And I think, like, if we would have gotten pregnant when we wanted to, 5 years ago, we wouldn't have Camp in Asher. We would never have gone to Africa. Just so many things that, I don't know, I guess our life is less focused on us and on, you know, making everything great and having an easy life and more outward focused. And I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah. Life is never how you think it's going to go. You know, even if things go pretty smoothly overall, even if you kind of, you know, think things are adding up, it's never quite like you thought. And so for anybody that is, you know, clinging too tightly to a certain vision that they want to have in their life, it's never going to be exactly like that. So the sooner you can surrender that vision yeah. and just think, okay, I would like to have children. Okay. But yeah. how's that going to look? We don't exactly know, but, or in what timing and things. And you know, so what would you tell somebody that is in the middle of infertility and isn't sure if there's going to be that baby at the end of 7 years or, you know, or is thinking about adoption but not sure? What would you tell somebody that their vision is not adding up?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is what the Carrie Camp is all about. And just our vision and ministry for women is just for them to know that they aren't alone. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because I feel like there's so many things and people that want to give you false hope and false promises of like, but it will, you know, people that they mean so well, but they're like,
yeah.
it will happen one day or you will. And it's like, but it really might not. And not to sound like harsh, but just surrendering, just like you said, like surrendering the control that you have over your life and trusting that God's plan is so much bigger and his timing. Like Isaiah 55 says, his ways and his thoughts are higher than ours. And just holding close to him and drawing near to him and just knowing that you don't have control, but knowing that you don't have to walk it alone, that there are other people mm-hmm. who are struggling and just seeking out that community. I mean, it's hard. Like, it's been a really hard road for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I guess it would be easy to say like, well, you're on the other side of it now. Like, of course you can see.
Yeah.
And yeah. And maybe, I don't know, that's the hard thing. It's like, right, I don't know right. why God does what he does for some people and not for other people. But I think it's just having hope in him and not in our circumstances and just being open to what, I mean, knowing that he's going to do like Ephesians 3:20, immeasurably more than all we could ask or imagine. And yeah, maybe it's not your plan and maybe it doesn't look how you wanted it to look, but just being open.
Mm-hmm.
We still want to adopt one day and who knows what that looks like. I have no idea,
right.
but it's exciting thinking about, you know, what God's going to do. And it's hard. It's not always exciting. It's not, I mean, there are days that it's really difficult for
right.
sure. And so I think it's just in those days, just having that community and, using that season just to draw closer intimacy with Jesus.
Right. And a lot of people who go through something like this, you know, it's very personal. And so they have a hard time opening up and maybe you're not sharing with your friends and, you know, and so you're really going through this personal battle and you're having a hard time every single month when you're getting those negative pregnancy tests. And it's like, that's weighing on your whole life, but nobody
yeah.
knows, like there's not really an opportunity to share that with anybody, unless you're asked that pointed question, which, you know, gets kind of awkward sometimes. So you created
yeah.
this Carrie Camp. Tell me about this retreat. And I just think it is so smart and there's nothing really else like it. Is there?
No, not really. That's sort of why I feel like God put it on me and Katie. So from earlier in the story, the Katie I was talking about that adopted from Guatemala,
mm-hmm.
she is one of the women that started the
okay.
Carrie Camp with me. And then our other friend, Sarah, and we all have totally different stories, but just as a similar heart and passion to connect women and to bring them together and just sort of create a space for them to be vulnerable and authentic with themselves and with each other. And we would do a retreat every fall. And so we're already planning for our next
mm-hmm.
Retreat next October. details to come on that, but it really is such a beautiful time. I mean, women come from all over the country, that some of them come with a friend or come with somebody that told them about it, but most of the women come alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's really, really brave. And it's just a beautiful weekend to share stories and to be encouraged and to hear biblical teaching and worship and to have fun and to eat good food and mm-hmm. to laugh and to cry. It really is. And then throughout the year, the group of women who come to the retreat, we have like a private Facebook group where we share what's going on and prayer requests and encouraging things that we find. It's just, it's been really, really cool. Because some people have that kind of community if they're in a bigger city, maybe like their church maybe has like an infertility ministry where they meet with women bi-monthly or weekly.
Mm-hmm.
But none of us ever had anything like that.
Yeah. So, I love that community you've created. How empowering and validating that anywhere along that journey, somebody's there that can really identify. Because without ever having been through it, it's hard to really get it. You know, if a friend comes to yes. you and says, this is what I'm dealing with, you can try and have as much empathy as possible. But without actually walking that walk, you don't yeah. fully understand the depths of it.
So what we have lots of people who say, hey, you know, my friend is really strong with infertility. I sent them y'all's blog or what can I do? What can I send them? I mean, a lot of people reach out to us and we actually have something on our website that's for friends and family. That's some great information.
Oh, that's great. So like we were mentioning before, there's some things that people say, well-meaning, like, oh, it'll work out eventually, or it just wasn't meant to be, or all those things that are well-meaning, but just not helpful. What are some things that are helpful to say? What have you heard anything in particular during your struggle that have really brought you comfort, or what can we say or do as a friend?
I think I think what you said, like if you've never been through it, you can't fully understand it. And mm-hmm. so I think it's perfectly awesome to say, I have no idea what you're going through,
yeah.
but I'm so sorry. And I'm here if you want to talk.
Yeah.
And I think we have to have like the right thing to say or the perfect thing to say. And we really don't. Like,
right.
Think about if you were in that person's shoes, like you just would want someone to listen to you or to sit with you or someone that you could call and just be honest with. And so I think it's hard. Yeah. It's like when you call a friend and you're telling them something, when they're just like being so encouraging and telling you the truth, sometimes you're like, I just want you to say like, that really sucks.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
I know the truth. I know that. And there are days where I need you to point me to that truth, but there are days that I just want someone to like be with me in my sorrow.
Yeah.
Just to say, man, I'm so sorry. And that's what, like, my care camp girls, they're the first people that I go to with all of that stuff, because I know they get it. And they're going to be praying for me and they're going to point me to truth, but they're also just going to be, man, that right. really sucks. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Yeah, absolutely. What was that like when you told them you were pregnant? Was that hard for you to share with them?
It's been really interesting. I think the girls that I know personally that have walked with me, like Katie and Sarah, they were one of the first people that I told. They were harassing me that whole day, like texting me a million times, like, please tell us, please tell us. They were so excited. And I think that most of the time, like for friends of mine who have struggled with infertility, when they get pregnant, it is like the most joyful celebration because you know their struggle and you know their hurt.
Yeah.
And you're able, and their story gives you hope. But that's not always the case. And so it's hard. I told them, like I found out I told the other girls right before our retreat. And that was a really tender and vulnerable and scary like, because I had all these fears running through my head of like, well, what if they don't like me anymore? They'll think the whole rest of my story is void and it didn't matter because now I have this thing that they all long for. And so that was really hard to walk through, but I was really surprised at the retreat, just at how many of them just said, you know, hey, we can't just be sad with each other when we're sad. Like, we have to rejoice and be joyful when awesome things happen. And so it was really cool to see them be supportive. But it was hard. Yeah, it was scary.
Yeah.
I was like, God, why? This timing is, like, horrible. I don't understand. But again, like, just trusting that his timing and his ways are are, he knows more. He has a higher vantage point than I do, and he can see how all these pieces work together when I can't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I spoke with Brooke White on another episode, and she dealt with infertility for a long time. And she said when she finally did get pregnant after several failed IVFs, she was really nervous to share that she was pregnant mm-hmm. because she felt like she was abandoning this club that she was a part of.
Yes.
And she felt like some people would probably be happy and some people would probably be jealous. And some people would say, like, you don't get it anymore because now you got your happy ending, kind of like what you were saying. And so but she said she was so pleasantly surprised by the support she received, and that ultimately, as long as she remains sensitive, she still gets all those feelings from the road she was just, had just gone down. And then going forward, she continues to be sensitive. And, you know, you can have all of those experiences. You don't lose, and it doesn't void your past and what you've learned in the past just because you have a new future. So I really like that. And I think as moms, sometimes we just compare ourselves too much, and it's hard to be happy for people when they have something that we want, you know, but that's part of being an adult. And that's part of being a big girl. But I think sometimes as women, we compare ourselves a lot, and we feel like if somebody else has what we want, we can't really be authentically happy for them. But I think there's so much joy that comes from celebrating with them, because wouldn't you want that back from them if you had something positive happen in your life? Yeah. And so you can't really expect other people to withhold something from you and vice versa. You know what I mean? But it's tricky as women, these mind games we play.
It is so hard. And I always want to remain, and I always will remain empathetic and tender.
Yeah. I think that's
critical. And it is. Like, there are some things that I see now on the side that are interesting. Like, I hated when people felt bad to tell me that they were pregnant. Mm-hmm. But now I see, I was really nervous to tell women that I've been walking with that still weren't pregnant. And I'm like, it just sucks on both sides. Like, it's just a hard thing. Yeah. But I feel like when we can be vulnerable and real with each other I'm so glad. Like, I still have women that will text me updates on what they're doing and ask for prayer. And I'm like, thank you. Like, I don't want you to just cut me out.
Right. You're still a part of the club. Uh-huh. You're still a part of it.
You always are a part of the club.
Yeah. What have you learned since starting this retreat 2 years ago?
It's a really brave and strong group of women. Mm-hmm. It's been cool. Like, this year, doing it our second year, just like, okay, we've gotten to a point where we know what we're going to do. We could set up certain things, and it's just like a formula that just like works for these women to be vulnerable and real and to connect, even if it's like sort of awkward at the beginning, which it always is with mm-hmm. a group of strangers. Mm-hmm. But it's been cool, I would say, too, like, for me, Katie and Sarah, to finally be, like, in a good rhythm and figuring out what our gifts are, where our passions are, and fall into roles that match that really, like, I feel really peaceful, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
About what we do in our retreat ministry, and it wasn't like that at the beginning. It was really stressful and consuming and emotional, and I'm the one that answers all the emails. And so when we get emails of people asking for prayer for things that are really hard, like, that affects me, or things that are really positive, that would affect me. And I'm a really emotional person.
Weighs on you.
That has just sometimes feels like, okay, this is too much. Like, I don't understand why I have this burden to carry, but knowing that it's not just mine to carry, that we're all in it together.
Yeah.
It's been cool.
Yeah, and I love that you didn't back down from something just because it was challenging at first, and even still that it's challenging. It doesn't mean that a challenge means it's the wrong thing. Like, you're pursuing something really meaningful and just such an amazing offering to these women. And so sometimes if you have an idea put on your heart that you feel like, okay, this is a passion project I want to pursue, it might be really hard at first, and you might feel like you don't know what you're doing. You know, we feel like that all the time. In parenting, we feel like that. In business, we feel like that. In friendships, I mean, name it. We always feel inadequate to begin with. But like our kids, when they're first learning something, like, we praise their effort. You know, we don't say like, oh, you don't try reading again until you get all those words right. You know, that's not the way it works. We need to praise our effort a lot more and really commend ourselves for sticking with something, because we can beat ourselves up to the point where we don't try new things. And look at what you've done in the last few years. It's amazing.
But it's really, I feel like out of all the things I do, it doesn't, like, the Carrie Camp to me, it's really humbling to be a part of. It doesn't ever feel like, oh, look at what I did, or look at this awesome thing. Like, it just feels like it's totally the Lord, and He is sustaining us through it. And it has been hard. I have wanted to quit multiple times.
Yeah.
But it's a really, really beautiful thing. So I'm honored to get to be a part of it.
I love that. That's so amazing. So as a very busy lady and a pregnant lady, how do you recharge on days where you're just like totally wiped and drained? What does Wynn Elder like to do to recharge?
Oh man. Well, yesterday I laid in bed all day and read a book and watched TV.
There you go. There you go.
which is hard. Like, I feel guilty. I like to be doing stuff all the time, and resting is really hard, but I'm leaning into it more. And I think I can get into, I like to get into a rhythm, like, during the school year with the kids. And I realized a few weeks ago, I was like, okay, every day I have, like, my list and all my things. Like, there's not a day where I'm, like, don't have something to do. And so I've made Thursdays my, I'm not meeting with anybody. I'm not, it's just my day.
Yeah, so, I like that.
I look forward to it. So sometimes I'll drop the kids off from school and come home and lay on the couch and watch the Today Show. Or sometimes I'll go to the coffee shop and do my Bible study, or like just having the freedom to, like, I'm not going to check things off my list. I'm not going to get on my work email today. Like, I just need to sit and be with the Lord, or I need to go to the mall and check out the H&M or whatever. Just the freedom that has been really key for me.
I like that idea. And even if it's not a whole day, even if it's just a 2-hour window where you can just, this is my time to do whatever I want without guilt. I like that. Yeah. I like that permission. Yeah. That's so awesome. Well, I'm so excited for the future of your family, and your kids are so adorable, and I cannot wait to hear the good news of your next little one. Do you know what you're having?
It's a girl.
It's a girl. Oh, how exciting. I'm so excited for you, Wynn. It's going to be so fun following along. So if people want to follow along in your journey, where can they find you online?
I am at Wynn Elder on pretty much everything.
Okay.
And Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Perfect. And I will link to that in the show notes on extraordinarymomspodcast.com as well. So Wynn, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Okay, this is sort of like what I would tell my college age self.
Uh-huh. That works.
Take more naps. Like, seriously, I just look back and I'm like, you think you're busy in the season. And you are. Mm-hmm. College is a busy time. Working pre-kids was a busy time. But I feel like I just made up things to do all the time. And I wish I would have enjoyed the silence more.
Yeah.
And just not... just like we said, not been like having to do something and check something off the list, but just being able to take a nap or go to the coffee shop by yourself and read, like just taking some time away from the to-do list.
Yeah. Enjoying that discretionary time. You don't have to hire a babysitter. That's really
nice.
Yeah.
When you don't have to pay for it.
I know. We just moved into a new house yesterday over the weekend. And so my parents were able to watch my kids, which was so amazing. And so literally unpacking my house, as undesirable as that job is, it was like a vacation.
Yes.
I got so much done, and things stayed done when I did it. It was amazing. So
I think it's amazing how much a mom can get done without kids in a short amount of time.
I know. I was telling my brother who doesn't have kids, like, he's like, how do you get anything done during the day? And I'm like, well, it's kind of like wearing ankle weights when you run. Like, it's like, wait, it's a lot of extra work. And then you take the ankle weights off and you just like take off and you're so fast. Like, you know, you can function with ankle weights on, but it's way better if you can just have that free time. So
that's a great analogy.
Kind of the same as having kids, but you wouldn't trade it for the world, huh?
That's right.
It's the best.
Right.
Well, Wynn, I wish your family the best of luck and smooth sailing on the rest of your pregnancy, and just enjoy it. Enjoy it. I can't wait to see your family's life unfold. It's going to be exciting. You're a delight.
Thanks.
You're an extraordinary mom. Have an awesome day. I want to thank Wynn for sharing her motherhood journey. She is so inspiring and encouraging, and I love how she's made something so positive in the form of her Carrie Camp to inspire other women and encourage other women who've been down the same really difficult road that she's been down. Perhaps you've experienced something in your life where you've been through a really challenging time, or maybe you're in it right now, what could you do to offer up your story to inspire and encourage other women? Our stories are so important, and we cannot possibly underestimate the power that our story could have in helping somebody else through what they're going through. So I encourage you to share your story, speak up if you see somebody that might be going through something similar, and encourage them on as they go down that path, because we need each other. And when it feels like somebody else is in our corner, it can really make all the difference in the world. When we're feeling weak, we can really feel fortified to have somebody else walking beside us. So thanks, Wynn, for sharing your story. As always, you can go to extraordinarymomspodcast.com, and everything we talked about in the episode will be there in the show notes. There'll be pictures of Wynn and her beautiful family, and any of the resources that we talked about will be there. And if you haven't already left an iTunes review, it means so much, and it really helps other moms to find the show when they're searching for new mom podcasts to listen to. And you can share a show with a friend as well. Show them how to listen to podcasts in the first place, because it always surprises me, people that are like, what's a podcast? So help them out in that manner. You can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3, and I just appreciate you joining me every week for these Extraordinary Mom interviews. It's a pleasure to bring you this podcast. I love bringing you extraordinary moms every week. And if you know an extraordinary mom that you think I should speak to, email me, Jessica@extraordinarymomspodcast.com, and tell me what makes them so extraordinary. And maybe I'll have them on an interview in an upcoming episode. So have a wonderful week, and I'll see you on Friday for another episode, and next Tuesday for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.